Good morning and welcome to the Preventing Grace podcast. I've been doing school and thinking about grades.
Yeah, you just finished.
So, Preventing Grace podcast. Here we are in San Antonio, as we were last week. And today we thought we would talk about a couple of things. First of all, it seems like some evangelicals think that it's okay to vote for Hillary because Trump is so awful. And apparently there was an article on the Gospel Coalition.
Yes.
Sort of not shilling for Hillary, but saying that it was okay.
Well, saying, yeah, well, actually promoting the idea of voting for Hillary just to get...
to keep Trump.
Keep Trump away, right.
Exactly. Away, which I don't think that's a good idea. Personally, I don't think you should vote for Hillary.
See, we're going to talk about that, and then we're going to talk about what...
We also thought we would talk about Facebook and some of the issues that might that a Christian might think about in terms of Facebook.
Okay, and then finally we'll talk do some we restaurant little, review yes, vacation. Right? Yes. Okay.
Holiday update. Okay. Vacation.
So let's start off with that first one then. So, yeah. You know, we as a pastor, I always like to make the caveat: I'm not telling you if you're in my parish, I'm not telling you who to vote for.
Right.
But I do think it's important to say, you know, the Christian when a Christian goes into the voting booth, he or she is exercising a governing role. I mean, we live in a republic. We don't live in an empire or a kingdom or a
not yet anyway.
So what that means is because we live in a republic that you and I have the role or responsibility of governing the nation, and the vote is how we do that. So it's a big thing. You're exercising dominion in a sense. The Romans 13 passage where Paul says that God sets everyone, every ruler, and appoints every ruler to his or her own realm of authority in our nation, that we are, in some sense, we have been appointed as rulers. And so you're going to be held responsible for the way you vote, for the way you exercise your rule. So it's important to have some principles, I think, to just think through that. And then traditionally, I mean, we've said, I don't care if a person's a Republican or a Democrat, or a candidate is a Republican or a Democrat, if that person is pro-abortion, then there's no basis or foundation for voting for that person, because you're voting for someone who supports a systematic murder of thousands of children a day. And
the problem for Republicans is that I'm not a Republican anymore.
Right.
Have tolerated people who said they were pro-life and then weren't. And for many, many decades now, we should have been getting rid of people who said they were pro-life and then weren't.
Exactly.
Who compromised.
Romney, for example,
who
says he's pro-life up to a point, but when it comes to rape or incest, he would be willing to murder the babies of, or willing to have the babies murdered of, of rapists or people commit incest. So
the problem with Hillary is that she's not pro-life.
No.
So she shouldn't vote for her.
Exactly, right. So
seems clear to me. Anyway.
Yeah, I mean, the argument being put forward is, well, she's a known quantity. We know what she's going to do. She's kind of a typical liberal politician, and she's going to work within the system to get her aims accomplished, but she's not a wild card candidate, and that's preferable, these people say, over someone who is wildly popular in certain segments of our country, whose opinions vacillate
within one sentence,
who has no real clear public policy, but kind of rules by.
He doesn't rule right. He doesn't rule yet. We don't know what.
No, he rules public opinion, or he rules his followers by just off the cuff remarks and kind of performance more than policy. And because he's so unpredictable, and because some of the things he said have been so terrible. I mean, murdering the women and children of terrorists. He's been quite racist, I think, in some of his remarks. We don't know what he's going to do. I mean, he's One minute he's for socialized medicine, the next minute he's, you know, bashing Hillary care. I mean, I think what his policy is with regard to the economy, no one really knows because he's been all over the board in the past, and and what he says now seems to be just kind of whatever comes to the top of his head at the moment. We don't know what he's going to do on immigration. He's backed away from the building of the wall, which I don't think a wall should be built, but he's backed away from that. And so we don't know. So the argument is better to have the evil that we know
than the evil that we don't know.
Right.
So I'm not really on board with that. I don't. I think it's evil either way, and I don't plan on voting for Trump or Hillary. Although I would say, and we've disagreed vehemently about this, that I would rather that Trump be elected, even without my help, than Hillary. And that's because I'm more comfortable with the African dictator meme than with the organized evil. So I think that Trump is sort of disorganized. I prefer disordered evil and chaos to ordered evil and chaos. Whereas you seem to prefer the ordered evil, if you had to pick between the two. If you were in a car with with Hitler, or with, who did we say, Mugabe?
Yeah.
Which would you pick? It's a hard choice. And I think I would go with Mugabe.
I think I would have to be kidnapped and put in the back seat of the car. I wouldn't pick any.
Well, I wouldn't.
And that's kind of what's happening, because we're deciding not to vote.
We're deciding not to vote.
For either of these clowns. But,
so, I wouldn't want to be in the car with Hitler. Wouldn't want to be in the car with Mugabe either, obviously. It's a difficult choice.
I mean, Hitler was self-preserving. This is what I'm thinking about Hillary. Hillary, I don't think, wants to go down in history as the person who destroyed the nation. She doesn't want to go down in history as someone who... She doesn't want to destroy herself. She wants to have the appearance of respectability.
She's already destroyed so much, though, and her, and so much of her own.
She has
care.
No, but she wants to have the appearance of respectability and appropriateness.
Yeah.
Trump doesn't care. Trump does not care about any of that.
He doesn't care about
the Constitution. Doesn't care. I don't think he cares about. He's self-preserving, but I don't think he understands really what will happen to his name historically, or cares what will happen to his name historically.
That's probably true.
To me, it's so utterly wild and crazy to put a man like that anywhere near the nuclear button. It's the stupidest possible thing you could do. I can't see Hillary pushing it. I can see Trump pushing it.
I can see Hillary pushing it. I can see Hillary getting mad and pushing it.
Well,
yeah, no, she seems completely unhinged to me as well. I think it's all now, perception.
See, both of us though agree, and this is where we probably stand apart from a lot of people listening, is that we both agree that we could never vote for the lesser of two evils, because you're still voting for evil.
Yeah, you shouldn't. Yeah,
you're still exercising your governing prerogative
to pick one evil over
another. To pick an evil, and I think that's.
But then people come back
inexcusable
and say, "Well,
and irresponsible.
Because you didn't vote, you are picking. You're in some sense, you are picking." Because you didn't vote.
Well,
so you're making a choice. Not to vote is to make a choice, and that's true.
But the response to that is, we were not the ones who nominated or who supported Trump throughout this process toward his nomination. The ones who are responsible if Trump is elected, the ones who are responsible if Hillary is elected, are all those blind supporters of Trump who just love him because he quote-unquote says it like it is. Sometimes you shouldn't say anything. Sometimes you shouldn't say what you think, and that goes almost uniformly for Trump. But in any case, he's that
I
we're
have,
not the fault. We're not if you nominate a foolish evil man, then don't be upset when lots of conservatives are not going to vote for the foolish evil man you nominate. That's just not going to happen. And don't be upset when the opposition wins. So that's the consequence.
It is weird though that the Gospel Coalition would decide that, or come out and say that they think people should vote for Hillary.
Well, it wasn't the Gospel Coalition didn't say that. They posted an article in which one of the authors of the article suggested, or the author of the article suggested that it would be better to promote Hillary than have Trump, right?
And I don't think that's true. I don't. It's an impossible situation. and so, a very sad one. But I do think that there's some things that Christians should note, and that's that people are a lot stupider than we think they are, including ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think conservatives have been duped over the decades by, and have put up with people in power who should have been voted out immediately when they did a bad thing. But we claimed to be pro-life and then weren't really in reality. I think that's mm-hmm. one mm-hmm. thing. And two, people are awful. You know, whenever you have sort of populism grow up, you can see what the human person desires, and that is evil. The human person does desire evil. So the presence of these two candidates in our political realm is a good indication of the human condition, and I don't think we should be really sad about it. I think we should, you know, note the obvious.
Right.
We are really bad, and we need to be saved by Jesus, not Trump.
Right. Well, I also mean, and this, I think this is part of the judgment on this country. I mean, a nation that has killed 50 million babies blithely, while promoting our own wonderfulness and thinking about what a wonderful
American
great country
exception.
We are, right? While murdering our babies, well, this is what we get. We get Trump and Hillary.
No, now you say that very sort of sadly, but I would just like everybody to note that, well over a year ago, when Trump first came on the scene, I was waving my hands and saying, "Oh, we're gonna have Trump. It's the obvious thing. America will have Trump because that you, as you've just said, you can't kill 50 million babies and not have Trump. That's what you get." And people, normal looking people, looked at me like I was unhinged and I was being alarmist and hysterical. And I would just like it to be noted that here he is at the very top.
Yep.
And none of us should be surprised. And we shouldn't be that sad about it either, because I think it's a good sign of the apocalypse. Smog will soon be coming, and
what is smog?
To save us all.
The sweet,
meteor
of
death.
Right.
So I'm not as sad as I was a few weeks ago. I think this next few months are going to be really interesting to watch. And it's all going down in flames.
Right.
One way or another.
Get ready.
Venezuela.
Yeah.
Here
oh,
we
really?
Come.
I mean, I am not optimistic. I'm worried about our country, and you know, maybe.
I'm not really worried. I think it's really bad. What is there to worry about?
Well, I'm just worried about how bad it will be.
Oh like, yeah,
the
no,
extent of badness.
It's going to be really bad. We are not going to have a good time.
Right. So
anyway,
we should move to the next topic.
Yes,
then, Facebook.
Let's not talk about that anymore. Okay, so Facebook. I've been thinking about it because somebody wrote me a really nice long email about whether Christians should use Facebook. And I've just been kind of thinking about it. And you love Facebook. You love to argue on Facebook. You were kind of the person that I was talking about that everybody has to forgive. Because
what?
You're so mean to people on Facebook.
I am not mean to people on Facebook. That's if people could see the gentle look in my eye and the...
Yes, as you're typing. You do always look very cheerful
and the
happy.
Compassionate smile that
yes,
I have.
As you're... Yes.
Then they would think that I'm not being mean at all.
That you're just acting in love and it's...
Speaking...
It's
I'm not
all,
being mean. I'm not calling names. I'm not using
true.
Ad hominem. I'm just saying this
but
is the way
you
things
like
are.
To, you like to poke at the hornet's nest on purpose, right? As we're about to go on a nice family outing. You like to get on and say, I'm never Trump. Which always causes, or anybody who claims to be a prophet is a false prophet. And then you say, I don't know why everybody's so mad at me today. Anyway, my question has been, knowing that we are the product being sold, and...
What does that mean? What's it that word?
So, Facebook is using all our original content to make money.
Not just us, I mean everybody.
But everybody, right. The people who use Facebook are not... are consumers of Facebook, but they are also the product that's being sold. I mean, the Facebook people are getting very rich
off of
our original content. So some people are really troubled by that. I think, you know, death is coming anyway. I don't really mind. And I know that I'm being spied on, and I know that Facebook is tracking my every move, as well as Google and everything, and that there's no privacy. I get it. And it makes me sad, but so far I've been unwilling to change my behavior based on that knowledge. My question for you is, would St. Paul use Facebook?
I don't think there's any question about it. Of course he would. I mean,
I feel like you're about to commit heresy. For some people think, well, it's the pure Christian
doesn't use Facebook. Look at the technology available to Paul in his day. He used it. The roads which linked the Roman Empire together, the birth of Christianity took place at a time when, for the first time in history, it was possible to travel all around the Mediterranean on foot, mm-hmm. on roads that were safe, or across the Mediterranean and seas boats that were safe. Right. Yeah. So he took full advantage of that. He took advantage of increased literacy, and he wrote his letters. Mm-hmm. So I think there's no doubt that he would use whatever media he could to get the gospel out. And to
he also, this thing that I've thought, I mean, when he went to Athens, he went to a place of diverse idolatry, every kind of idea was being shilled in Athens and being propagated, and it was not a pure platform, and he stood up there and spoke.
You're right,
and
Athens
was mocked.
He preached first in the market.
Yeah, that's what it
was. Yeah. And then the philosophers asked him to come preach on the Acropolis, and he did.
He did both of those, which were forums that weren't suited to, or weren't, made for him.
The beating, pulsing heart of pagan thought and wisdom, and he was there. And he was not afraid to engage and to give as well as he got, and... That's another thing about Paul. He's a pugilist. I mean, he will not back down. If he thinks someone's in an error or someone's teaching false doctrine, he will point it out, and he will say it in his letters clearly without any ambiguity.
Sarcasm.
With sarcasm. With
anger.
Right. Snarky sometimes. I mean, look, if you want to go back to circumcision, why don't you just go the whole way and emasculate yourselves? I mean, that's a Facebook. If someone said it on Facebook, they might be...
everybody will block them and be so angry with them.
Right, right. So, I mean, Paul was not someone to mince words, and he wasn't someone to shy away from.
He was combative.
I don't think he would have much patience with, Christian tone police either, who want to castigate, well, that wasn't a very gentle thing for you to say about those Judaizers, Paul. And Paul would say, I don't care, because they're leading people to hell. So I think there's a... Of course... That's not to say you should purposely go out and be mean in following St. Paul. but it is to say that there's a robustness to Paul's interaction with, a pugilistic robustness with Paul's interaction.
I do think that Christians, I have this sort of, Christians are lying back on their fainting couches still.
Yeah.
And the time for that is really over, because we're about to have Hillary and Trump.
Right.
Maybe they'll join together on one ticket. It would be the worst of all possible worlds.
Right.
We really do need to stand up and pick up some kind of broadsword and go out to wherever you can and preach the gospel wherever you can. And if that happens to be Facebook and people get mad at you because you're not for transgenderedness and you think that marriage should be between a man and a woman, and that infants should be allowed to live... Those shocking, shocking ideas that nobody can tolerate, you should go into some kind of public place and say them. Either to your friends or on Facebook or even on Twitter, but knowing that it's a horrible place. I mean, no, you're not going out there to be congratulated and, wearing your white robe of glory.
Right.
You're going to get bloodied up.
Well,
and I think that we need to kind of shift, the Christian community needs to shift a little bit and move forward onto the balls of the feet and not be sort of laying back on the back part of your foot and wondering, wringing your hands in anxiety about whether or not we feel we look loving. Yeah, we've moved beyond that. There's no more just looking loving.
Gay relationships are sinful.
Yeah,
is hate.
Yeah, now. You can't. So
you cannot appear loving. No,
you
no
need
you say.
To just like right. get over that. That need. That's not gonna. That's not.
And recognize it for what it is. It's not a need to be presenting the gospel rightly. It's a need to be liked.
Yeah.
And that's the thing.
We've moved beyond that. There's no more room for that.
We're not gonna be liked.
Yeah. You're really not. If you look traditional and you go into Target and you're a man and you've left off your eyeshadow, then
right. you're well, not going to well, what about those who say, well, you know, I've never seen anyone persuaded by the use of Facebook, and that's I think that's also born of a kind of a strange idea about what evangelism and proclamation really is. You know, we first of all, I think there have been people who've been persuaded. I know personally people who've been persuaded from one point of view to another. By Facebook conversations, that's happened before. If they can be done intelligently, they can be done hardly, but even in a confrontational way, but still result in changed minds. I know I've known people who I've had arguments with, gone to the mat with, and they've come back, you know, maybe a year or so later, and said, "Well, that was a really important conversation." Mm-hmm. And I've had the same thing happen in reverse. I've changed my views on a few things because of conversations mm-hmm. on Facebook. So yeah, it can change minds. But secondly. Really, the purpose in preaching the gospel is twofold. One, you put the truth out there because you trust that God can use it.
Yeah.
Not because you think you're going to be persuasive.
It's not your persuasive yeah. power. It's the truth itself.
Faith comes by hearing, and hearing by the word of God. So you proclaim the truth and let God worry about how he uses it. And the word is powerful. He can use it to change lives through Facebook. Mm-hmm. He can use it through Twitter. He can use it through whatever media he chooses to use it. But it's his word that does the work, not you.
Mm-hmm.
So don't worry about your persuasiveness. But secondly, the other reason why we proclaim the gospel is because God also uses it to harden hearts. People yeah. reject it. That is a means
work.
By which God God hardens those who refuse
it. It's hard yeah. though. I mean, I don't like that second thing. I really don't want people to be hardened to the gospel because of something that I've said, and that's happened to me many times, mm-hmm. even personally. So I've gone out to coffee with somebody and, like the dolt that I am, shared my faith in Jesus and how he saved me from my sin and he's loved me so much and I love him back now. And the person, this, you know, poor person that I went to coffee with, it's horrified, you know, shocked, unable to deal with this horrific thing that I've just said. And goes away and not only hates me forever, but then appears to hate God.
Yeah.
And I don't want to have that kind of coffee. You know, I just don't want to have that kind of engagement anywhere. So it's really hard for me to dig my boots right. in and decide to do it anyway because we all have to talk about Jesus wherever we are. We all have to preach the gospel. That's another thing where I think we have to shift away. We just have to let go of the idea that anybody's going to like us ever again. It's not going
to
happen.
But going back to that, I mean, this is God's, if it is true what you say, if what you've said
right.
is true about the gospel, about Christ, then we have to be ready for God to use that truth, how he wants to use it,
right.
not how we would have him use it. And often what he wants to do with it is not what we would want him to do with
right.
it. And so he's God, we're not.
The other thing is these issues, marriage, transgenderism, abortion, homosexuality, these are gospel issues.
Mm-hmm.
If you just sort of go out and condemn them, okay, that you could, maybe that's one half, and you should go on and say how they are gospel issues. So marriage is a gospel issue because the man and the wife are reflecting Jesus and his bride to the world. That's a gospel issue. Transgenderism is a gospel issue because God made us in his image, male and female, and we're reflecting his glory, so you can't mess with that. All these things, you should know how they are gospel issues so that when you say, this is wrong, you're not just saying, this is wrong because I hate to gays.
Right.
And I just feel really uncomfortable.
Right. And that was a real danger. When we first had people come to Good Shepherd and after we left the Episcopal Church, we were always on the lookout for people who were coming because they don't like the gays.
Yeah.
And we don't want that.
No.
We love gay people. We love people who feel themselves to be gay. We want them to come to the gospel.
If you, If you just don't some other kind of person, then you need to go back to square one. You need to know why transgenderism isn't okay. And it's not because you feel uncomfortable with it. It's because it's a gospel issue.
Right.
So do the hard work. And then when you post about it on Facebook, make sure that you have the whole... have why scripture says it's wrong and how God's glory is reflected in the human person. And, you know, but also if you don't get it completely right, then God is still good enough. What are you looking at here?
We have 5 minutes left, we should talk about...
More importantly,
food.
We're about to go downtown San Antonio to the Pearl Brewery area.
No longer a brewery, but they have a nice open market there.
An open market, and then one of our favorite restaurants in San Antonio is La Gloria. And what I particularly like is they have these stone pots that they bring you full of meat.
Mm-hmm.
Like some sort of
It's authentic
stew.
Mexican food. It's not Tex-Mex. It's real Mexican food. And
it's just a little bubbling cauldron of beef.
Yeah, and make their own corn tortillas there, which are just succulent. I mean, one of the things I like about San Antonio is you get really authentic Mexican dishes. The way they handle meat, the way they handle tortillas, the way they handle vegetables is what you might find in the interior of Mexico, at least in some restaurants, not all of them, but some of them. Not that Tex-Mex is bad. Some Tex-Mex is really good.
I do love Tex-Mex. But,
but it's really nice to come down here and have some...
So, in La Gloria, in particular, last week we make a pilgrimage there, a holy pilgrimage where we pay homage to this glorious kind of food. And you sit outside, it's near the river walk,
and you sweat, and
you eat Mexican food. And the children can wander out into this grassy area, and it's just really pleasant. And so we really recommend that. I hope it's still good. We haven't been for a year. And...
Hold on.
That's what we're doing today. And then you're going to be roasting a pork roast with our son who had that on his list. We've been carefully systematically teaching the children to make food.
Yeah, Rowan made bread yesterday, the day before, and we cooked a chicken with Rowan, with Aiden.
With Aiden. So you're going to do pork.
Yeah.
And that's going to be a really nice day. So we finally finished all our work a week and a half in, and now we're going to begin to
vacate
or holiday rest. And I hope next week that we'll go look at all the different Spanish missions along the river. That's
my
thing that I really want to do. We never do it. We just went to one of them.
Oh.
And so...
You see one Spanish mission, you see them all.
That may be true. That's what we're going to do now.
And yes.
Anything else that you wanted to say?
That's about it. I think we should close.
Yeah, I thank you all for listening, and we'll be back next week.